Welcome to another episode of Street Level Marketing. I'm your host, Mark Lamplew, and today's episode is a nostalgic but powerful look back and ahead, really, at the at automotive marketing. My guest, Graham Scott, is a marketing fanatic whose career spans more than 30 years of dealership evolution. You know, from print ads to programmatic media, Graham has done it all, and his passion is client success. We'll begin by rewinding to a time before Google, before smartphones, even before social media, to an era when TV, newspaper, and community events ruled the dealership lots. Graham, what were the go-to advertising channels for dealers back in the 90s?
Firstly, hello, Mark, and thank you for having me on. It's a real pleasure.
Yeah, thanks.
Back then, I mean, we focused on newspapers. I mean, small dealership groups of four or five dealers would often have $1 million contract a year with one local newspaper. It was radio, it was cable TV, and it was direct mail. We also did a few on-site events to try and bring traffic in. But in those days, it was all about the ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Creativity was everything. And obviously it's still a part of it, but there's a lot of other stuff that's been added since then.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember, back when I was growing up, because, I'm an 80s kid, and I started driving in the 90s, but every Sunday, a newspaper was about this thick.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a section in there about this thick of all the dealership, ads for the week and, payments in there and everything.
Oh, that was huge. I mean, a really big part.
Can you share a standout campaign or tactic that really worked well back then?
Yeah, we used to do these really big events.
Uh-huh.
And the group that's now the Tim Moran Auto Group was then the Gosh Auto Group, that we had a giant used car tent sale at a local college. It was a 5-day event. Everybody's used cars. We sold a car a day for $19.99. And the hook was we had the owner suspended by a crane, probably 100 foot in the air. He was in a commercial van, and the hook was he wasn't coming down until we'd sold X number of cars. So the location was near a freeway. So he would get out, he would lean out the van, he'd wave to everybody. And the amount of traffic that brought, physical people coming, was incredible. Really big success. But we obviously haven't hung any owners up in the air for the last few years.
How did the dealers measure success without like the digital analytics that we have today?
How many cars did you sell? I mean, how many cars did you sell? How many ROs did you write?
Yeah.
I mean, that was it. And how many people were in the store this weekend? Everything was subjective.
You'd have your up sheet. And
that's right. If the up sheet was low, it was your fault. And why didn't you get too many people in? And, it was all about getting people in the show.
Yeah. So what was the role with the traditional media and newspaper?
It was massive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, cable TV. I remember that in those days, the Larry King show was really popular. So we always made sure that in our schedules, we ran on that show. And I think it was also ESPN that was a really popular channel. But yeah, we spent a lot of money on cable. Cable, newspapers, and direct mail is where we spent the money on. That was what we had.
How important was the community-based marketing and the grassroots? Did they have a guy on the ground? Did they have a set amount of events that they would try to go to a month?
Not as much as we do now, simply because, I mean, we obviously were very friendly with the local community and sponsored the schools and the baseball teams. But when we did that, there was also really little opportunity to share that we were doing that. I mean, now we do it a lot. We have the benefits of social media, so we're able to almost instantly share what we're doing. We didn't have that opportunity in the 90s. So we still did them, but they weren't a major part of any strategy.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays you can create an event in a weekend. You know, back then, if you wanted to have an event, you would have to plan it out months ahead of time.
Run
your ads for a particular amount of time, and it really took a lot of planning.
Yeah, it did. As you say, not like now where we can put them together a lot easier.
When did you first hear the murmurs of the digital creeping into automotive?
That would have been the late 90s. And I remember the first website that I kind of got involved in was for the Cerritos Auto Square. They were the first clients who said, oh, what's about this website thing? We need to be there. And I remember their first website was $200,000. And that would have been 99, maybe 01. It was 200 grand.
Wow.
And probably did nothing. Just a bunch of pictures.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I can remember. I don't know what year Craigslist came out. But that would probably have to have been the early to mid-2000s.
There was another sheet that we used to use then. I can't remember the name of it, but and then we would do those stuffers, those envelope, you know, the envelopes that come with about 1,000 different coupons in.
Yeah.
And we would do that, but that never really brought us much.
They used to, I used to sell cars for Saturn back in the early 2000s, and we had a GM. Yeah, he was really big on making sure every car antenna had a balloon tied to it. And he would come in and he would get mad if two cars in a row would have red balloons. Like, you had to make sure there was different color coordinations with the balloons. And
yeah. Oh, and have the dancing man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was very popular in the 90s. Unfortunately, I still see them now.
Yeah.
At some dealerships. But yeah, the dancing man was a big one.
What was the customer buying journey like without the internet?
A lot simpler. Basically, they saw one of our ads and they walked into the dealership.
Yeah.
A typical buyer then would physically go to 5 different dealerships. You know, load the kids up in the car on a Saturday, and they would hit on average 5. So that's how it was. They saw us in the newspaper or saw us on the TV. And then they would literally drive in, drive around their 5 favorites, and then pick a store. Uh-huh. Not like now, where basically they visit one store because they've done all the other shopping online.
I was just going to say that. Well, I remember being a kid and that, you know, going with my dad, me and my sister would, you know, hop in the car. We'd go to Murphy Ford. And we would literally seem like we were there for days. I mean, you would be there all day, and then you would have to come back the next day, and you know.
Yeah, it was a very physical buying experience. You were there in person for pretty much all of it.
How did the brand loyalty and local trust factor into the strategy back then?
Well, it was always in the back of your mind because, you know, the last thing you wanted to do, this was your community. And, you know, these were guys whose maybe grandfathers, fathers, and now them all buying from the same place. So it was in our minds, but we didn't have, with reviews, for example, we didn't have the ability to post or share reviews. So we did it really to solely to keep our local customer base happy, and saw that we were involved with the community.
Yeah, that's true. And thinking about that, back then you didn't have online reviews. So most of your bad, I guess, customer experiences were shared by word of mouth. So it would probably, you know, you didn't have that instant, you know, where you had to really, dealerships back then probably really didn't have to focus on, you know, the customer experience as much as they do now, because now you make somebody mad, they're going right to Google and leaving you a bad review.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, you get a customer who's upset for whatever reason. I've seen some where they'll immediately go and post on every platform that there is, be our Facebook page, be our Instagram, be on the website, be on social media, all the same bad reviews.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have to pay a lot more attention now simply because they're all visible to a lot of people. You know, luckily, if you focus on and you get a decent reputation score, far better nowadays, I think, to have a 4.7, 4.8 is kind of the ideal review number. Because nobody believes that a dealership that deals with so many people, so many different circumstances, is going to be a 5-star every time. That's impossible.
Yeah.
So if I see a whole bunch of 5-stars, I get very suspicious. I see a 4.7, a 4.8. That's a good, solid review number that's believable.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time for this segment, but when we come back, we're going to, you know, start diving a little bit more to the automotive marketing. So we'll be back with a word from our sponsors. Welcome back to Street Level Marketing. Loving what you're watching? Don't miss a moment of Street Level Marketing or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our full lineup of bilingual programming in both English and in Spanish. Prefer to listen on the go? Catch the podcast version of the show right on Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and everything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are. And we're back. My name's Mark, and I'm here with Graham Scott. And, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, coming out of the 90s and into the 2000s, I think it's probably the biggest transition or switch into internet to starting to get into the internet trends. What was your first experience running a digital ad for a dealership?
I don't think I can remember the exact one. That was quite a while ago, but probably it was something with Google.
Yeah.
I would think they were the first platform that really became active and you could start to see some kind of ROI. So probably it was some kind of Google ad campaign.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I think I was explaining before our commercial, I think Craigslist and eBay were probably the first kind of websites you could post stuff yourself online for sale. And we had the guy at the, you know, the Saturn store. He would make you sit and go through all the Craigslist ads. And if somebody was selling a car on there, you would call them up and try to get them to come in and trade it.
Again, though, it's a one-on-one experience.
Yeah.
It's not a digital experience then. It was a phone call. Can you come and do it?
Yeah, that's right. How did websites and online inventory change the sales process?
Oh, it was huge. I mean, if you just look specifically at the sales process, A customer is a customer is a customer, wherever they came from. A good salesman will sell prospects from all kinds of channels. So while it didn't as much affect the sales floor and the sales process, it changed marketing completely. Up until digital, agencies really differentiated themselves with their ideas. I can remember pitching, and 90% of the pitch was about our creativeness, what we could do with this type of campaign, that type of campaign. Once websites and digital marketing started, it was a massive learning curve for agencies, because suddenly creativity wasn't enough. Uh-huh. You had to understand about how websites work, how we use them. We had rudimentary analytics. You know, you could measure your traffic, kind of. Uh-huh. But as far as what that traffic did and all the other outcomes that you really need, it was very tough to measure initially. So as an agency, your technical knowledge and understanding was just ramped up really fast. Because those that understood the basics of digital and in some ways how to traffic work, how to inspect the traffic and the outcomes, were ahead of the curve. You could no longer walk in with a great radio idea or this. They would say, well, what about my online? What about this? What about that?
Yeah.
So it really changed everything, and we had to ramp up our knowledge really fast.
How did the digital analytics and the attribution begin to reshape the strategy?
Well, it kind of grew as we got a deeper and deeper understanding of what traffic did. I remember the big thing about digital when the first few years was, it was this magic promise that you could trace the buyer all the way in the sales process until he got to your store. Well, that's a reality in some ways with certain tools now, but that promise hasn't really ever materialized really until current days. So we couldn't see that. We tracked it as best we could with the basic tools we had. I mean, you look at how GA4 analyzes traffic compared to the original Universal Analytics, yeah, and it's night and day. So still, in those early days, it was still very much about the message. And along with agency knowledge growing, the dealership understanding also had to grow. And, you know, so then dealerships and general managers and owners would also develop some of those skills. But it was really our job as the agency to really dig deep, because GMs are the busiest guys in the store. They don't have the time to focus on all of that stuff. I mean, that's changed nowadays. A lot of them have a much better understanding.
Yeah.
But in those days, it was really agencies teaching them, look, this is how you do this. This is how you measure this. But, you know, the dealership employees and the managers have caught on, obviously. But it's still, the whole advertising field has switched so much from being an ideas field to being really technically proficient in the digital world to help dealers understand really what's happening.
So I'm going to go a little off script a little bit, but did the digital agency or the agency aspect, were they like the primary focus of all the digital and website stuff, when did dealerships really start bringing it in-house?
It really depended on the size of the group.
Okay.
It's very difficult for one dealership to have one guy who has a role like ours, you know, where they're controlling all the advertising. It doesn't pay for them. But typically a group of four or five will be able to afford somebody to be in-house that really has a big understanding. But for years, we relied on outside partners.
Yeah.
You know, not the agency became like the in-house contact. Any questions came to the agency.
I think the late 2000s is when SEO, search engine and optimizing websites really started kind of being important. Can you talk about some of that SEO practices back then when they were first coming, when it was first coming out and how?
It was a lot of guesswork.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of confusion about what worked and what didn't. One guy would tell us this, the other, oh, no, that's all wrong. You have to do it this. So we kind of early on stumbled our way to really try and understand it.
Yeah.
And now, again, with the introduction of AI, that whole SEO process, again, is going through a massive overhaul. And what worked a year ago isn't going to work now.
Yeah. How did the online reviews begin to shift the consumer trust? Because reviews kind of really started in the late 2000s as well.
It was when we had the ability to share them with our customers. So obviously on your Google, I can't remember what it was called then, some kind of Google business listing, but whatever it was called way back, you had some reviews on there. So customers had visibility there. You then started to see review sites like DealerRater, for example, where customers can go and actually read all your reviews. When we could share them on social media, they became very important. Really helped. And we would also post them on the website so that anyone visiting could see two or three of our recent reviews, because the general public doesn't trust what we say. They trust what their friends say or their family say. So, but having good reviews has become more and more important now.
Yeah, it's almost, I think, half of the your reviews and how many you get and how often and is a big part of your search results now and how often you're going to come up in that first spot. So if you're not focusing on reviews, viewers out there, for any business, not just automotive, for any, if you're not focused on getting reviews, getting positive reviews,
right,
you got to start, because it's also, from everything I read, and we're going to talk about AI, you know, a little later, it's going to be a big part of the AI search. We're out of time, but when we come back, we're going to get now, I think, really into the, like the 2010s to 20s, which that was a transition, I think, of mobile and personalized data and using that data to sell cars or, you know, anything, any type of services. So when we come back, we're going to hear a few words from our sponsors. Welcome back to Street Level Marketing. Loving what you're watching? Don't miss a moment of Street Level Marketing or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our full lineup of bilingual programming in both English and Spanish. Prefer to listen on the go? Catch the podcast version of the show right on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and everything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are. And we're back. I'm your host, Mark Lamplew. My guest today is Graham Scott. And now we're going to talk about like the digital aspect and the mobile aspect and getting into like the 2010s to 2020s when we went from basically no internet to internet with just websites and very basic to now we're getting into, you know, everything's on your mobile device and you're accepting tracking on your mobile device and we're able to target ads much more effectively and efficiently. So, you know, getting into that, how did CRMs and DMS integrations change dealership marketing?
Well, now we had all of our data in one place. You know, and the CRM was all of our sales data, DMS was all of our service data. And, you know, the first iterations of CRMs were nothing like they are now. And really the same rules applied then as they do now, where they'll work if you know how to use them properly and you're very accurate with the data that you put in. It's like the old saying has always been said, garbage in, garbage out. It's the same with the CRM. If there's bad information in there, it's not going to magically fix everything for you, but it's somewhere where you're able to track, you know, customers, you're able to track your patterns of communicating with them, setting up processes, and reaching out to them. It's a big change because suddenly we had all our data in one place.
Yeah, so like I said before, I sold cars for Saturn, and I was with them when they went out of business in 2008. You know, we were kind of read their way to go on the wall. We would sit there for days, and nobody would come in. but they had a CRM, and for the viewers, a CRM is like a platform you use to put all your customer information in. And the early CRM that they had at the automotive group I was with back then, it was very basic. You would put your customers' information in there, the date, and then every day you came in, you would log on and it would tell you who to call that day. You know, this is your 24-hour follow-up or 3-day or 7 or 30, and then who you sold a car and you had to follow up with them. But it was really basic. Now, I mean, they build email campaigns and, you know, do all kinds of things. And for viewers, I mean, everybody should probably, if you have even a small business, start some sort of CRM to manage your customer database and potential customers. And you can pay big money for, you know, platforms we use like DealerSocket, but there are free ones out there like HubSpot that if you're a small business, you can use. And it's an effective tool to help you stay on top of, you know, potential customers.
Yeah, helps you stay on task.
Yeah.
Every day with what you need to do.
What role did video and social content start to play back when it first started coming out?
So social really, I think, would have been like 12, 13. Maybe a bit earlier, but then it was one thing. Your goal with Facebook was to get people to like your page. That was it. Yeah. Everything was to get people to like your page, so you build a big following, so that every time you posted some kind of content, everybody that followed you would see it. So that was the initial thing, is everything was posted to get likes and to build up followers, because organic was still very powerful. Now it's great to have as many followers as you can. An organic post without money behind it isn't really reaching anyone these days.
Uh-uh. No.
I mean, it's... It's like the I kind of liken what Facebook did to like the high school, the drug dealer hanging outside the high school. You know, you get some free stuff at the first. Hey, we'll give you this, all this organic reach. We'll give you this. And then now you become addicted to it and you really want it. Oh, I'm sorry. Your organic posts are only going to reach 3% of your audience. So please pay us some money. So that was kind of that. That's how they approached it at the start. And, you know, we were aware of it. We didn't deeply understand it when it first came out. And, I mean, I'm sure you remember the very initial Facebook stuff that came out. Their ad system was all messed up.
Still.
It was so, some people said still it.
Yeah.
But that was all messed up. I think it wasn't until later, 14, 15, and ongoing, where we thought, you know what, we do need.
Yeah.
It's a great tool. We need to invest some money in the program because organic is dying. And so as time went on, we focused more and more on it, figured out ways to remember getting our first inventory carousels up, thinking, wow, look at this. They can see all of our cars.
Yeah.
And now it has so many, there's so many different platforms, so many different functions, so many different campaigns you can run on all of them, that it can be almost a full-time job just managing that stuff. It's grown and grown and grown. And I know dealerships where they'll be running SEM, for example. I've been working with one for the last few months. They were just spending SEM, brought in social, and it really worked for them. And so they cut their paid search budget because they're getting a lot more now from social. So huge part of the marketing, but it has to be used. We still have to focus on the outcomes. What's it bring? Great ad, looks wonderful, really funny. What do we get from it?
Yeah.
No one buys a car because you had a nice video.
Nope.
You know? It's what do we get from that, and how can we connect that to the sale?
How has personalization changed how you sell cars?
With the increase of the available data, we're now able to send messages. Now we can do it on a one-on-one. We can certainly start pushing messages to very specific targets. So personalization has just got better and better. Now with the advent of CDPs or customer data platforms, that one-on-one messaging has become even better. I mean, we didn't have the opportunity in the past to see a visitor that came to the website, was focused on a really particular vehicle, and then left. Well, we couldn't follow up with them really because it was anonymous data. Now we know who's on the website. We know to a certain extent, not everything, but we can match those to people in our CRM. So once they've looked at a vehicle, we can then send them a personal message solely based on the vehicle, the specific vehicle they're looking at, and then other similar vehicles. And that's a one-on-one personalized messaging, which is, at the end of the day, the most effective thing we can do.
What role did the compliance play in the strategy? And when did it start really, being important?
2019, 2020.
Yeah.
To be openly honest, been a real pain in the rear with the new laws, because that's always changing.
Yeah.
But we understand and we respect people's privacy. So you have to make sure that everything you're doing is compliant with these privacy laws, because the fines, if you're not, can be in the millions. I mean, I've seen dealer groups get $5 million fines.
Wow.
Because if you take something like a text situation and you're mass texting people, you don't have the permissions, well, you will be fined $1,500 for every text message. So imagine if you're doing 1,000 people and you have multiple conversations and they all get flagged and are incorrect, you're talking a massive amount of money.
Yeah.
So one of the things we have to do in all the marketing we do is to make sure we're always privacy compliant. And also, we now also have to be disability compliant. Our websites have to comply with the American Disabilities Association. So that's another thing you never thought about before.
Yeah.
But now you have to make sure your site is visible with people with specific disabilities that couldn't work on a regular website. And if you don't get that right, you're open to more fines. So it's honestly, is a minefield, because it's always changing a bit.
Yeah.
Oh, now you can't do that. Oh, that used to work. No, you can't do that anymore. So it's a big part of our marketing for sure, and sales process, to make sure we're always privacy compliant.
We're running out of time for this segment. And then not to mention, you have the lawyers that are just looking for cases to pick up, class actions.
Our friends, the ambulance chasers.
Yep. Well, we're going to go to another break. But when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about AI and how that's entering the automotive space and, well, really any space. We'll be back after a word from these sponsors. Welcome back to Street Level Marketing. Are you loving what you're watching? Don't miss a moment of Street Level Marketing or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to a full lineup of bilingual programming in both English and in Spanish. Prefer to listen on the go? Catch the podcast version of this show right now on the Now Media TV website, www.nowmedia.tv. From business and breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and everything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are. Well, welcome back to the show. It's been a great show so far with Graham. This last segment, before we end the show, I want to talk about, AI and, how it's changing the automotive space. Like, quite frankly, we're seeing it ourselves on some of the things that we're doing. How is AI impacting creative, targeting, and lead response today?
Creative is huge.
Yeah.
To make a video in the 90s, a 30-second spot was about $1,500. Now, we can create videos in 5 minutes. We can be as creative as we want to be. With Google's new AI video tool, which I know you're very familiar with, we can really create high quality videos for almost no investment.
Mm-hmm.
So from a creativity wise, it's made a massive difference. Again, we've had to increase our knowledge about, there's a million AI tools out there, so you have to study them, which one's going to work for you, which one isn't. So it's another additional learning step, but I love it for creativity. I think it's given us the ability to do stuff at this level that usually was reserved for bigger corporations, you know, the big team. I mean, I remember Ford would spend millions on creating their running footage for all the Ford vehicles. Well, now, you know, we're seeing Super Bowl commercials that there was no filming. It's all done in AI.
Yeah.
And being very successful. So for creativity, I love it. It's been funny how a lot of automotive vendors, when the buzzword AI came out, suddenly they were all using AI. Every system they had, oh no, yeah, we use AI in this. Yeah, it wasn't. It was just a simple data prediction, or it's nothing to do. But everybody suddenly had AI in it. Well, as we now develop a much bigger understanding of it, there's a huge difference between this pseudo AI and real AI. It's not going to go away. Clearly, it's going to become bigger and bigger. As far as affecting marketing, you can already see how, whereas in the past, Google was the big dog in the room and dominated search and many other things, that now their cost per clicks are going up. Yeah. Traffic to the website is coming down, because the first thing people see now is they ask a question, they get an AI response. Uh-huh. They no longer have to scan through the first 8 or 10 links that Google showed them. The answer's right there. So, again, that's a massive change. So I think you'll go, and you're only going to see that grow.
Yeah.
So it's up to people in our field to understand it as quickly as we can, and to figure out what we need to do to start appearing in that AI search. And, you know, and knowledge just has to increase and increase on doing that. Was that a part of your question? Did I answer that?
Or no, that's right. Yeah, I'm thinking about the AI thing, and probably once a week, or, you know, a little part of the episode, the topic or the question comes up about AI replacing jobs, and, you know, it's going to take away your jobs. And I'm under the mindset that I don't think it's going to take jobs. You might see jobs kind of transition. But I think the people that are starting to understand and use these tools are going to be more effective at their roles. And for like agencies that, you know, thrive on accounts, you're no longer going to have those big $10, $15, $20,000 a month accounts. What you're going to end up happening, you're going to be able to provide more of the same things to more. So it's going to be more, you know, it's going to be cheaper for you to get some of the smaller businesses that might not have been able to afford a marketing agency.
Right.
Now they can. You can finish your creative and much.
They're not having to pay $1,500 to get a video, you know, and labored editing, you know, hours and hours to get it right. No, anyone can now. I work with some small businesses around here, and they love it because now I can do videos for them as part of the package, and they're not paying huge amounts of money. And it, again, it gives us to more tools to allow us to differentiate our clients from any of the others. Really give us another opportunity to do that. It's going to make us, it will maybe replace some very like data entry jobs and things like that, but it will make most people who understand how to adopt it just a lot more efficient with their time.
Yeah.
You know, you don't spend hours and hours on a creative task. You take an hour and you can bang out all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So I think it's a huge advantage. It's great at analyzing data too. But I think the overriding fear of everybody's going to lose their job. No.
What are some sales?
Sorry, go on.
I was going to ask you, what are some of the, you know, new innovations right now that are redefining the buyer journey?
I think, as we discussed before, the ability for one-on-one communication.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole buying journey, when you actually have the tools where you can see where did a buyer first start in their journey and where are they now? Very little physical interaction, but a long chain of digital visits, finally leading them to your CRM and your sale. I can't think of anything really specific apart from enabling one-on-one, much more effective communication. But their abilities are going to expand and expand. The agents will be creating, will be better programmed, better able to understand the task, and quick to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess one of the areas that I can think of now is just a lot of the AI chat type tools. And they're starting to really understand customer questions and ask, you know, like you said, very personalized questions. They can pull the data of what the customer owns, and they might need a service appointment when they're on the website. So reminding them, hey, your 2024 Toyota is up for a service appointment. Well, you want to make that now while you're here? It's pretty wild.
Yeah, jump on them while they're active. You know, if we can sell them something else, then great. Yeah, and say, and AI is really good at that. And I think its effects are just going to grow and grow. It's not a salesman. Selling skills are still very much one-on-one. I mean, a customer today, with the tools we have on websites, could do the entire buying process from start to finish and never come in a dealership. So everybody set these up during COVID. Oh, we have to have them. We have to have them. We did a review of those tools actually earlier this week. No one ever completes that entire journey. The investments are way too big. I mean, the car is often the second biggest purchase. And I would never go through that process without touching, feeling, driving the vehicle. And these people still do. I mean, a manufacturer saying, you have to have it, you have to do it.
Yeah.
So we have them on the site, but no, the selling process still involves that one-on-one contact and conversation and relationship building.
Yeah. Well, we're coming out of time, so I want to give the, you know, this has been a conversation, has been a masterclass, you know, for automotive marketers and dealers who want, you know, to future-proof their strategies. What's the best place they can contact or get a hold of you?
The agency website is frontrunnerdigital.com. I'm on LinkedIn. The agency is also on Instagram and Facebook. Or because if people watching this have any questions whatsoever, call me. My cell phone is 951-258-6469. And if you call me and you mention this show, I'll give you a complete review at no charge and make recommendations for what you should be doing in the future.
Thank you, Graham. Thanks again for sharing 3 decades of wisdom, innovation, and honesty.
Now you make me feel old.
To our viewers, you know, marketing isn't static. It evolves with technology, buying behavior, and the boldness of those willing to lead the change. Whether you're printing flyers or programming AI, what matters most is that you understand your audience, measure your impact, and stay human in the process. Remember, marketing is the bridge between value and visibility. And if Graham taught us anything today, it's that bridge needs maintenance, but the journey is always worth it. I'm Mark Lamplew, and this is Street Level Marketing. See you next time.